Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network. Emotional, creative, and often comical. Welcome to another in-depth but out-of-the-ordinary look at what it's like to write. This is Writer's Block with Coin6 News anchor Jenny Hansen.
So joining us on the podcast this week, Kate Holohan, author of Her Three Lives, which came out in April. Kate, I have to admit that we did do this last week and I completely bungled it. I was used to recording in a room where the director sets it up so it auto records. And I was not in that room last week. And we did this whole interview. I'm like, she was so cool. And then we ended. And I'm like, why is the meeting not converting to a file? And then I realized I never hit record. So that was an embarrassing moment. But you were so nice and gracious to be able to do this again for me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on again. And yeah, glad we can do it.
Yeah. Well, and it actually, I was telling you, I got your book kind of late in the game. So I hadn't had a chance to really read it. I got to read it this weekend. And I love thrillers. So it's like right up my alley. And we'll talk about your book in a minute, but I want to first, you know, for people listening, kind of let them in on who you are and your background. Because I know you've written several books, I think five now, but you were a journalist before and you wrote for some pretty, you know, prestigious newspapers. Well, I know you said you were an intern at the Boston Globe, yeah. But you got to actually cover some interesting stories that involve crime.
Right. I did. So the first time I was actually really a crime reporter was that internship, because when I was in high school, I wrote for the Record newspaper. I started with obituaries, but if it was a murder that had caused the death, it tended to be moved off my plate.
They didn't want you writing flowery pieces on murders on the obituaries.
Yeah, they were. But, you know, obituaries used to be kind of the way to kind of get into journalism. So I did that as I was, you know, the most popular kid in school writing about, you know, people that had passed. No, I'm kidding.
You know, I've always wondered, because I always read the obituaries. I find them really interesting. And I'm sometimes like, why doesn't it say how they died? You know, if they died young, is that something that like,
I think it used to be style. I'm not sure what it is now, but it used to be style that if it was, if the suspicion was suicide, you didn't say anything.
Oh yeah. That's a good point.
If it's young, they would say died after a long illness. If people wanted to not disclose what the illness was,
right?
But if someone took their life, you just said,
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I was an intern at the Boston Globe and I ended up covering this oxycodone theft ring that like all these pharmacies were getting like ripped off. And it started off in Southie and then it kind of expanded to all of these suburbs of Boston. And I think when the first one got ripped off, they're like, oh, you know, it's a little like pharmacy robbery here, put the intern on it. Right. And then it ended up being like this rash where like every 3 days, because I guess the street value of the drug was so high and it was the same gang of people doing it. And so I ended up covering it for the summer and it made like I think it was on the front page and then the New York Times picked it up. And so it was a great experience. And for me, not for all of the pharmacists that were, you know, being held up at gunpoint, but for me, coming at it after the fact. And fortunately, nobody was murdered during these robberies. It really was kind of these, they would show up with a gun, they'd immediately get the drugs and then
but that was like, that's an interesting foray into, you know, reporting and crime. I mean, did you enjoy covering that or?
I mean, I thought it was interesting. I think, I like it when you can actually talk to more people. So the problem with crime is that usually the perpetrators won't ever speak to you, right? Because either they're not caught or when they are caught, they have a lawyer who is saying that's the worst idea ever, right? So, so that's the problem with crime, is that a lot of times you end up talking to the victims, which you know, it's a sympathetic story, but I think, you know, with crime, a lot of times what you really want to know is like, why are these people doing this? Are they like, for that story, are they addicts? Is it because that, you know, the street value is really high and like compared to whatever job they could normally get? Not that I'm justifying it, but you want to understand the motivation, like what is it that's driving someone? And you don't get that opportunity right. writing an article. You do when you make it up in a book. So
into the whole psychology and the dark mind. Mm-hmm. And so, and after covering that type of stuff, didn't you cover like business type news too?
I did. So yeah. When I graduated Princeton, I went back to the Record newspaper where I had written obituaries, and I was kind of a local news reporter, and then covered features there for a little bit too. Then moved on to Business Week, where I wrote for the magazine and the online publication. And I covered a lot of social media, because at the time, you know, these were like, will they make it? Won't they make it companies? And so I got to, you know, interview like Mark Zuckerberg and all of these like kind of social media giants that we know now. And so that was a really great time. I got to kind of be a little on the forefront of some of the technology that now has become such a part of our lives.
Yeah.
And then after that, I worked for MSN Money for a little bit, and then CNBC. Mm-hmm. And there I got to also kind of still with a definitely business, but I think because of the tech background, I got a lot of those tech stories. So I got to interview like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. And so that was a cool part of the career.
Sure. But yeah, I remember you saying that when we did our first interview that you were trying to kind of make things a little more, flowery is not the word you use, but you were trying to maybe use some of your creative juices in some of these journalism stories, which can be kind of hard to do.
It was.
Right?
Yeah, because I mean, you get these people in a room, and I just, you know, I want to talk about what they're wearing and how they speak and the way they gesture and all of this stuff, and nobody cares. And so it's just, you know, or at least maybe they would care if I was doing kind of a profile, but a lot of times, you know, you're just writing, or I mean, at CNBC, you were really just interviewing them to say, these are the questions that you could ask on air. Cause it was, these were like the pre-interviews that happened beforehand, where the person's going to give you a good answer versus, you know, they're going to dodge that one, or this is the foray into it. And then when I was at Business Week, you know, they have a very, or at least they did, they might've changed since they're now bought by Bloomberg, but they had a certain like style and voice to the publication, mm-hmm. which is obviously the opposite of what you want when you'd like to be, you write your own books. You want to kind of put your own voice into it and have a way that people recognize as your writing.
Right.
And that's not what they wanted. They wanted the Business Week voice. So that was always challenging to kind of put myself in the headspace of let's write like a, you know, kind of an older, middle-aged investor who really doesn't care, you know, how about Bezos's mannerisms. He really only wants to know if Amazon stock is going up.
Right.
And so,
yeah. And so then in the back of your mind that whole time, were you thinking at some point, I mean, you got to pay the bills, you know, and all that, but at some point you wanted to get this creative writing thing going. I mean, I'm assuming that was always kind of there in you.
It was.
Yeah.
I always wrote fiction on the side.
Yeah.
And, so I would write all day for my job, and then I would come home at night, and whatever was left, I would try and like, you know, write my own fiction stories. And it was a great outlet because I got a lot of the frustration where I couldn't put details in. Not that I got to put those details from those particular people, but I got to kind of develop characters in a way that I would like to. And the problem with it, though, was when you're writing as kind of your side hustle, right? You're not spending the time that somebody who has it as their career is. They're waking up and they're writing every day for their publisher on with the same, you know, idea towards a deadline and what they have to accomplish every day that I'm doing when I was writing nonfiction.
Yeah.
And so it's very hard to compete with somebody who does it full time with like my side hustle and kind of break into that the industry. So what I found was it didn't really happen for me until I had my second daughter and said, okay, I'm going to take some time and I'm going to extend my, you know, after maternity leave, and I'm going to just really give this a year and see if it works. Mm-hmm. And so it was that book that then I got an agent and then I got a publisher, because I was really treating it like this is my career.
Right.
And at least for this year. And if it doesn't work, well, then I'll go back. But doing it, you know, with kind of the dregs of what was left with my creativity wasn't enough. You know?
Yeah. Well, and that must have been kind of a scary time. I mean, what was your husband's reaction when you told him you were going to do that? And I mean, obviously I would probably worry like, oh gosh, well, what if I have no career to go back to if this doesn't work out? You know?
Oh yeah. Believe me, I was, because in journalism also, you're kind of only, you know, they want a good writer, but they want you for your sources.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I kind of knew that, well, if I'm out of the game for a certain amount of time, no one's going to remember. And then I'm going to be going back at a much lower level, because they'll feel like, well, before we thought you could get certain kinds of interviews and now you can't. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely scary. You know, it was also scary because for the first time I couldn't hide behind my publication, right? Like if I wanted to do research and say, hey, so I was hoping I could interview you because you're a detective and you're a female detective on a force, and I think it would be interesting. And I want to do this because I'm writing a book, instead of I want to do it because I have, you know, Business Week behind me,
right,
and this will, you know, be in their magazine. And also, it means that whatever I put out there, the criticism is like on me, right? Whereas when I was writing an article, it was kind of like, well, I did my best to explain factually the situation, right? If you don't like the article, maybe you don't like the fact. Like it's not.
That is a big thing, actually. Yeah.
Right? So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think putting myself out there in that new way was also very scary. But fortunately, my husband was for it, because he could cover the mortgage. So
nice.
That was helpful.
Yeah.
And then I think he was also just really tired of probably me complaining that I wanted to really write and get a chance to do this. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's worked out. So you're five novels in, they've all been like thriller, that sort of genre.
They have been. I mean, yeah. One has an investigative character who's more like a traditional, he's not in the police force, but he's an insurance investigator. So that one's a little bit more procedurally, mm-hmm. I guess. But that was The Widower's Wife. But they're all kind of in these this domestic suspense, psychological suspense category, where the protagonists and antagonists are kind of in the same intimate unit, whether it's a family, a husband and a wife, mothers and daughters, neighbors that whose houses are, you know, really right next to each other. They're direct neighbors. It's kind of these relationships that are really about the home and the intimate spaces, and then the things that people hide from each other.
Yeah. And so your latest book, which I said I read on the way up and then back from Seattle over the weekend, it involves Jade and her fiance, Greg. And I know it's called Her Three Lives, and it's like what, her public, private, secret. And it's not just her. I mean, other characters as well. I really enjoyed it, like, because it, in typical fashion, I had no idea where it was going to go. And I had one thought in my head, and, you know, but you did a good job of tricking readers isn't the right word, but, you know, like making people think one thing, but then it goes another way. Were any of these like inspired by anything that you covered in your life? Or
I always joke that I write from a place of anxiety. I just think about things that bother me, and then I go, okay, like let's really explore this. Not just to freak myself out, but because I feel like if it's interesting and I want to explore it, hopefully a reader will too. And so, the genesis of this book was I had all of these cameras, these kind of like Nest cams and Ring doorbells that so many of us have, and the Google Assistant and the Alexa, and they're just part of my life, right? And they make things convenient, and they were particularly helpful because I would get to put them in my kids' room, and, you know, in case anybody woke up in the middle of the night, it was like a safety thing. But as my kids grew older, I was still had the cameras in there, and I would find that they would get into arguments, and I would say to them, well, you know, I can figure this out. I will just call it up right here on my phone. I can look at this tape and we can see like who started the argument or who actually dropped that the sweater on the floor or whatever nonsense it was. Mm-hmm. And then I kept thinking, well, that has to be really psychologically damaging, right? To have somebody feel like they're always being watched and that their private behavior can always be reviewed in kind of a public way. And so that was what really gave rise to this story of, well, what if you had a couple, in this case, Greg Hamlin, who's a 52-year-old successful architect, and he meets Jay Thompson, who's this 32-year-old would-be interior designer, but she has a blog about Caribbean home decor and aesthetic and lifestyle and food. And they're about to start this second act of their life. And when they're the victims of a home invasion, Greg is hit over the head with a crowbar, suffers a traumatic brain injury, and then to protect himself, kind of outfits his whole house with all of these cameras that so many of us have and starts inadvertently spying on his fiance, and then starts to believe through what he sees that, you know, maybe she had something to do with this break-in that nearly cost him his life.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to get to how this technology can really erode this public, private, and secret life, how it meshes it all together. And then what are some of the downsides and the tensions that result from that. The fact that like Jade is in her house and can't have a moment where she's not potentially being spied upon.
Yeah.
And then also that conversely, that she's putting a lot of private stuff out there publicly because she has a blog and she wants followers and people to find her interesting. And so she's blurring it herself with the technology. And then it's kind of finds herself on the other side of it where she's not choosing to blur it, but it is.
Yes. Blurred. Yeah. No, it's really good. And I'm assuming like the mom in the book, her mom was based on your background or your mom's background. Yeah.
So my mom is not that religious.
No. I meant the Jamaican part.
Okay, but my mom is Jamaican and my dad is Irish American. And so Jade has a Jamaican American background. And for me, I have dual citizenship. I'm Jamaican and
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I was able to put in some cultural things, which were great. And I wanted a little bit of tension there too, because, you know, there's always a little bit of work to be done when people come from different cultures, of making sure that there's understanding and that nothing is misinterpreted. And so Jay comes from a background where, one, there's the little things, like she's cooking food. And when he's already kind of growing suspicious of her, he has to wonder like, well, what's actually in this? Because there are different flavor profiles and he might not, you know if it was poisoned. And then the other thing is that she's aware of like the stereotypes that exist, you know, with her being younger and Black, that maybe his kids might think that she's a gold digger. And so she's very conscious that exists out there and trying not to fall into that box, and really trying to present herself in a way where even things that maybe she normally would share, she's very reticent to, because she's concerned that it will kind of add fuel to the fire of these stereotypes that maybe people have because of where she culturally comes from.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, I love how you were able to put that character in there as kind of an ode to your own background. And you dedicated the book to your daughters, but also their teacher, one of their teachers, to kind of get you through. Yes. So you wrote this during the pandemic, or you were working on it during the pandemic?
I wrote it right before, but the editing all happened during the pandemic. And the editing can sometimes be harder deadlines, right? Because you get it and you could have to rewrite massive things within like a 2-week period, as opposed to when you're doing your first draft of the book before your publisher gets it, where it can be, you know, for me, who's like on a book a year schedule, I probably could take like 6 months, right? And so now all of a sudden it's like the editing, it's like they gave it to you on like the first and they want it by the 30th. And I really couldn't have done it if it wasn't for how on top of things this one teacher was. I saw the difference because I had a daughter who, you know, and this woman did the best she could, but she was taking over someone who was on maternity leave. She had been teaching for all of like a week,
right?
And COVID hit, and she was a brand new teacher because she was really just in there for like the maternity leave window. And so she had to kind of figure everything out. And that one was hard. It was difficult for her. And I think it was difficult for the parents because we had to like fill in a lot. Whereas this other teacher, I mean, it was almost like she had a crystal ball and she was expecting it. within 6 weeks, it was just like, okay, everything's online. We are good to go. I have these slideshows. And my kids, my child who was in her class could work independently.
Yeah.
Which really saved my life. Because if I had to homeschool two kids in two different grades, I wouldn't have been able to make my deadlines and I would have lost the contract. So,
yeah. Wow. Well, you made it through and you're already working. You're already in editing for your next book. Is that right?
I am actually writing.
Oh, right. So okay.
The book comes out summer 2022.
Okay.
So my deadline is like July 1st. And so,
Of this year. Because all the edits come. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
It takes a long time with the book because even after they are done editing it, they want then to give marketing a long time to kind of try and figure out like, hey, what does the cover look like? What's the back copy? And give people time to review it so you can have some, hopefully some writers say some nice, you know, things after they had a chance to read it and weigh in. And so it takes a while even after the book is done to actually make it
interesting. Well, I saw a lot of people wrote nice things about this book, Her Three Lives, and I'm going to have to go back and read your other books now that I know you're out there, because I enjoyed this one so much. And again, like everyone can get, you can get these on any, you know, we have Powell's Books here in Portland, Amazon if they want. I mean, anywhere you can get books, really. Your books are available?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. Please support your local bookstores because geez, with COVID, they need it. And it's unfortunate. There used to be a great one in my town in Tenafly, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And then it eventually closed. And now, you know, and it was such a great also spot for the community. And you could have a coffee in there and you could read. And it was, you know, they do a lot of wonderful things in addition to just selling books. And it was a shame.
Oh yeah, I love bookstores. We've had a couple close down too here in Portland, so it's been sad. But it was great talking to you. I appreciate you doing this again. I know you love to do every interview two times, and I promise that I'm recording on this one. So
I see the dot.
Oh, you see a dot too? Okay, good. Good to know. I just start asking the people, do you see a dot anywhere? Well, I appreciate it, and Kate Houlihan, thanks again.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Take care.
The COIN Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW, a full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family. See why more people are switching to Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW.